The views and opinions of this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers. There is substantial risk of loss in trading futures and options, which you should carefully consider prior to trading.
Bringing you the ag information you need, this is Market Talk, produced by the American Ag Radio Network. Now, here's your host, Jesse Allen.
Well, we saw the outside markets, stocks in particular, under heavy pressure as we got hotter than expected consumer price index data out on Wednesday morning. Meantime, it was a mixed bag in the grain and livestock trade, with Kansas City wheat, for the most part, trying to be the upside leader, showing a decent day on Wednesday. We're going to talk about all that more here today on Market Talk. Thanks for joining us on the program. I'm your host, Jesse Allen, and again, a lot of pressure in the outside markets on Wednesday. That hotter than expected CPI number out, and that seemed to have an influence on the broader grain and livestock trade. The dollar shot higher. That was a headwind for commodities. That CPI up 0.4% month over month and 3.5% year over year in March, with the CPI excluding food and energy up 0.4% month over month and 3.8% year over year. All of those were one tick higher than trade expectations and steady to higher from February readings as well. Third straight month of higher than expected readings as Fed policies fail to eliminate this sticky inflation environment. I know we're going to talk about that and some of the impact here in the grain and livestock trade on Wednesday's session. Mike Zuzlow with Global Commodity Analytics is going to join us for our market analysis coming up here in segment two and three today. Looking forward to catching up with Mike and talking about what's happening in these markets. This cattle trade has somewhat kind of leveled out here, it looks like, although we did get some of that headwind from the outside markets, I'm thinking, here on Wednesday. But we're going to get some updates from Mike on the cattle side and also his thoughts in this grain trade as we are largely getting into the U.S. spring planting window. And, oh yeah, we got a WASDE report out Thursday that we don't expect many changes in, but it's going to be a talking point nonetheless. So looking forward to all that here on the show today as we will have market analysis coming up with Mike Zuzlow in just a little bit. Again, overall, kind of a mixed bag for the most part. Firm in corn, firm in Chicago wheat. KC wheat was the upside leader. Soy complex under some pressure on the day. And we saw a decent amount of pressure in the livestock trade as well. So we're going to talk about all that coming up here in just a little bit. Joining us first, though, on the show, soybean cyst nematode, SCN, is one of, if not the top yield-robbing pest in our soybean fields across the country, and BASF is trying to help producers make sure they prepare a good management plan. They have more tools available online at scnfields.com. Joining us now for a conversation about that and more, Troy Bauer, BASF Senior Field Technical Representative. And Troy, thanks for joining us. Hope you're doing well.
Yeah, Jesse, great to talk to you today, and thanks for the intro. That's the scnfields.com. It's really part of the whole BASF portfolio of digital solutions, really helping to support farmers, kind of automate some of the data that we have out there, and really helps to create some actionable insights for growers.
Yeah, because with SCN, as I kind of alluded to, such a yield robber, such a tough pest for folks to deal with in their soybean fields. And I know a lot of times, Troy, when it comes down to it, many growers don't know they have an SCN problem until it's too late, right?
Yeah. This is really a pest that you can only manage before you plant. And so it's really important for you to understand what type of level of SCN may be present out there for the growers, and they really need to help to improve their decision making. And that's what SCN Fields is all about. It's really to help growers get on there. They can go up and look in their area, kind of by zip code or by their hometown, see what types of level SCN is present in the fields surrounding them. And then once they kind of get that educated information, and maybe realize that SCN may or may not be a more of a problem in their area, they can go out and soil sample and determine that level and then develop a management plan. Because as the Crop Protection Network estimates that we're losing about $1.5 billion in annual yield loss every year to soybean cyst nematodes. So it's something that's really actionable. And based on what we've seen at BASF, SCN is detected in nearly 80% of the fields that we soil sample it for. And then almost kind of in that 55 to 60% range, we have SCN at very damaging levels. So we need to make sure we have a good management plan in place for growers to maximize their yield potential.
Well, and I'm wondering about this too, when it comes to SCN, Troy, can it have effects on other diseases as well in our soybean fields? Can it cause, make things easier for other diseases or pests to show up potentially? Talk to me about that a little bit.
Yeah, Jesse, you're a very good student. That's exactly right. SCN can really exacerbate the situation for a number of other diseases. One of the diseases that's more prevalent throughout the Midwest is sudden death syndrome. And those two pests really exacerbate each other. SCN can help bring on more SDS pressure out there. And that's why it's so important to manage both of those pests together. So if you can help manage your SCN and help manage your SDS, you're going to maximize your yield potential. And that's why it's so important to have a product like Alevo that BASF provides to the marketplace. It has activity on both of those pests, and it's a proven product that returns about 4.6 bushel per acre when those pests are present in growers' fields. So growers need to understand the level of disease pressure and SCN pressure that they have in their field and then manage appropriately, develop a management plan.
Yeah, and that management plan, to your point about, thinking about seed treatments like Alevo and things like that, and just making sure that you don't go into a growing season blind, so to speak, right, Troy? I mean, you make sure you are ready and prepared, because to your point earlier, if you find it in your field in the middle of the growing season, it's probably too late at that point to really mitigate the damage, isn't it?
That's absolutely right. So growers need to have a management plan in place for a soybean cyst nematode. Number one, they need to go out and soil sample their fields, understand the level of SCN pressure that's present in their field. And then once that gets to a damaging level, they need to start a management plan, and crop rotation is usually the best practice. The second best practice after that would be to plant a resistant soybean variety, PI88788, or rotate to Peking source cyst resistant. It seems to be a better resistance package, but we can't just rely on that either, because they will develop resistance to that as well. And then the third piece to that is to use an effective seed treatment, such as a Levo seed treatment. So you need to have all those steps in place to really help manage that, because that $1.5 billion that the Crop Protection Network estimates we lose to SCN every year, it's the largest pest that we have out there. So develop a management strategy and put that in place to maximize your yield potential and increase your profitability.
Definitely have different things together to make a comprehensive management plan for SCN. And again, folks can find more info at scnfields.com. You can also, I'm sure, Troy, folks have questions, reach out to your local BASF technical representative, and going online, of course, and many, many ways to get in touch and talk about putting together that SCN management plan, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Reach out to your trusted agronomic advisor. Reach out to your local BASF representative. We would be very happy to help you out.
Troy Bauer, BASF Senior Field Technical Representative, thanks for joining us on the program today. Really appreciate the time.
Yep. Thanks so much, Jesse. You have a great week.
We'll be back with Mike Zuzulo here on Market Talk right after this.
Make sure to subscribe to the Market Talk YouTube channel. You can watch our latest interviews with top market analysts in the country, find bonus content, and much more. It's easy. Just go to youtube.com/@MarketTalkAg and hit the subscribe button. Or you can search for Market Talk Ag on YouTube.
If you miss an episode of Market Talk, you can listen back to the show anytime. Just search for Market Talk on your podcast platform of choice, and you can hear past episodes of the program on demand.
Stay up to date and listen to past episodes online at markettalkag.com. Now, back to Market Talk with Jesse Allen.
Sharpshooters chewing up the
Well, outside of Kansas City wheat on the day Wednesday, everything else was either firm or under pressure. Hotter than expected consumer price index data out Wednesday seemed to really weigh on this market trade. We're going to talk about that and much more. Joining us for our weekly conversation, Mike Zuzulo with Global Commodity Analytics is with us. And Mike, thanks for joining us again here this week, sir. Always good to chat. And hey, we got some fodder to talk about today to start the show. That CPI number, what was it, up 3.4% year over year, I believe, something like that. It was a little bit hotter than expected, wasn't it, Mike?
Yeah, it ran hot, and I liked how you teed up today's show, because let's hope the hard red wheat is giving us and telegraphing for us where we're going to be tomorrow after the WASD numbers come out, not the soybeans, because it was quite a difference in trade today. But yeah, the CPI data, Jesse, I think it did something very important to the marketplace. And this is your actual graph of all items, which is your red line, versus the food items, which is your blue line. And typically, there's a couple times when, like with Russia coming in and invading Ukraine in 2020, you saw the food take the leadership to the upside, the blue line take the leadership to the upside. But typically, the all items takes the leadership, and we'll look at some gasoline analysis as well here in a minute. But that's usually the heart and soul of the food side of the equation, is what's it take to make food. And that's what the other components, they're usually very important to the food side of the equation and lead. But this CPI number showcases the argument higher for longer. And what that means is the inflation is going to be higher for longer. The interest rates are going to be higher for longer as a result of that, in most likelihood. And therefore, the Federal Reserve is kind of trapped. And if the interest rates are higher for longer, do the bond yields start skyrocketing again like they did today, and support and take us to new 2024 highs in the U.S. dollar like we did today? So from a demand standpoint, this is not the report we wanted to see in the commodity sector as a whole. But I would also argue that this is really interesting, given the fact that part of the reason the gold prices just got done making a new record high here just in the last week, several new ones in the last couple, 3 weeks. I think part of the reason was because they were anticipating this higher for longer mindset, and that inflation's not going to go away. So at the end of the day, this may be exactly what the commodity markets need from a standpoint of getting a little bit more respect from the fund investors. And that's going to key most importantly on the currencies again, in the Asian currencies especially. But here, this chart is what we were talking about a second ago. You got chicken in the yellow. You've got ground chuck, which is going to be your lighter blue line color. And then unleaded gasoline in your dark blue or almost black color. You notice very clearly that the unleaded gas took a dip, but the beef and the chicken have not taken a dip ever since the pandemic. They had a spike down in the beef, but then they just kept on going higher, and really no pause whatsoever for the most part in the last 3.5 years since the beginning of the pandemic for chicken. And so this is where what I don't want to see is gasoline prices start to inch up to that $4 a gallon level at this stage of the game as we get into the summer grilling season, because with these high chicken prices and these high beef prices, consumers are going to have a tough choice, and they're probably going to start ratcheting down some of their excess purchases that we continue to see in some of the other data that we get from like the restaurant, National Restaurant Association and such.
Well, I want to segue over to another chart looking at gold versus the dollar and the ratio here. You brought up gold, and I'm glad you did, because I've been very curious about this this somewhat, I guess I would maybe even say it's a parabolic type of move we've had in gold here in recent weeks, just shooting higher. Then you get the CPI data out on Wednesday, and the dollar surges, to your point. It's felt like up until Wednesday that gold's maybe been a hedge against inflation, so to speak. I mean, talk to us about that a little bit and what you're seeing here, Mike.
I think you're 100% right. I think I'm doing a special report right now on inflation, and I'm keying off two extremes. One extreme being record gold prices versus the massive net short positions that the managed money funds have been carrying in the agriculture space as far as the grains and to a lesser degree, the soy complex as well. And this was before the HPAI problems came out. This is not a new story. This is a story that continues to be a massive divergence. And so what is it with gold? Is it finally gotten the respect it deserves because this inflation is not going to go away? Is it a lack of confidence in the other currency markets and even Bitcoin starting to not look as good as gold could be looking? And is it a situation where we have a market that central banks are starting to buy more heavily into the gold market, potentially both the retail and central banks buying because of geopolitical issues increasing? And Jesse, I'll tell you, from the research I've done so far, and I'm about halfway through the report, all those factors are contributing to this record price in gold, in my opinion. And now we're getting to the point where the gold divided into the dollar is getting to its highest level since almost 2011. And that's when we had those significant problems in Africa, in the Middle East, as far as a record high inflation in some cases. Remember the Egyptian overthrow and the beginning of the Muslim Brotherhood and the food inflation and the food scares that we had in the emerging markets around that time period. This is getting to be a situation where I think we really want to stay close at hand, especially heading into Thursday's report. And this is the segue that I'll say after having seen the CPI data, having seen the price action today in the different asset classes, I think that if the USDA would come in tomorrow and tighten up the supplies even more on corn and beans through the South American production and wheat through some of the other countries that are, I think, struggling with getting exports out, including Russia at this point, I think the trade may start to see a mindset of we better respect these commodities a little bit more, because let's face it, U.S. corn exports year to date and inspections are up 35%. That's gaining versus where we were a couple months ago. We're only 30% better versus year to date numbers a couple months ago. So we're increasing our market share and we still have world wheat stocks to use levels at 10-year lows. So something I think is in the works where something's going to have to give.
Let's look at the Bloomberg Grain Index. We look at this relatively often, Mike, you and I do. And as you're talking about that, looking for maybe some different clues from USDA on Thursday's report and more, and looking at all this economic data and more, anything major standing out to you right now in terms of the Bloomberg Index?
Yeah, I really love this chart because if you recall, Jesse, back in January and February, we were talking about China exporting deflation into the rest of the world economy. We had the Secretary of Treasury go over to China last week and essentially say the exact same thing. Don't oversupply us, but it's oversupplying the world in certain key areas. And that's where those red arrows come into play. That Bloomberg Grain Commodity Index really slid in that 2015 to 2019 time period because we did have deflation. Well, okay, so I just talked about the grains. You know, we have a situation where the Department of Energy and their short-term energy outlook just bumped up the 2024 demand for crude oil and liquid fuels consumption. We have a situation where we've got other data coming in that says we are not deflationary. China's economy has shown some inflationary turn to it and a lack of deflation, and obviously today's CPI data. So when I look at that wedge that's forming and has been forming for almost a year now, coming off the highs from 2023, I have to think that the path of least resistance is for this to break out to the upside and those net short positions get covered by the managed money, because we're not deflationary, we're actually inflationary. And this kind of ties everything we talked about in today's show together as far as what's going on in these outside markets and the geopolitics of Israel. I just saw a Bloomberg headline 5 minutes before we went on the air that the United States is issuing a warning, an imminent threat that Iran is going to go after Israel at this point. Crude oil prices turned higher after being lower. And then you have that Black Sea issue and what happened in Odessa again with Russia going after the infrastructure again in Odessa, part of the reason why the hard red wheat prices were higher. All these things seem to be coming together to me at this point of this wedge that we should be going higher as we get to the deeper part of April, not lower. And if we do go lower, though, I've got to get on it and get some floors underneath me.
Well, once again, we are joined today by Mike Zuzulo from Global Commodity Analytics here on Market Talk. We're going to continue our conversation. Coming up after the break, again, mostly firm day. KC Wheat, the upside leader, with May up 17 and a quarter, 594 and a half. Crude oil up about 1% on some of those geopolitical worries as well, 86.13 in the afternoon trade, and stocks under heavy pressure, livestock under pressure too. We're going to talk more with Mike Zuzulo coming up right after this. Back with Market Talk on the way right after the break.
Make sure to subscribe to the Market Talk YouTube channel. You can watch our latest interviews with top market analysts in the country, find bonus content, and much more. It's easy. Just go to youtube.com/@MarketTalkAg and hit the subscribe button. Or you can search for Market Talk Ag on YouTube.
If you miss an episode of Market Talk, you can listen back to the show anytime. Just search for Market Talk on your podcast platform of choice, and you can hear past episodes of the program on demand.
The views and opinions of this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers. There is substantial risk of loss in trading futures and options, which you should carefully consider prior to trading.
Bringing you the ag information you need. This is Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
We are joined today by Mike Zuzulo with Global Commodity Analytics here on Market Talk. And let's pick up the KC wheat market too a little bit more here, Mike. As again, we've indicated, outside of all the other pressures in the market, Kansas City wheat, HRW futures, had a really solid day on Wednesday. Kind of perplexing to someone just outside looking in, seeing that, wondering what's going on here. Let's look at the monthly HRW wheat chart. Anything you're seeing here that was maybe could maybe be a helpful indicator as to why the strength in Kansas City wheat on Wednesday?
It is, I think, Odessa and what is happening with Russia and Ukraine. I think it's also, though, Jesse, this phytosanitary issue that Russia seems to be having with their two of their key export facilities and companies. And I'm not so sure it's not their supplies are dwindling and they're wanting to contain their domestic inflation. That's a guess. But what I love about this chart is that after today's new monthly high for the month of April, the hard red wheat is forming an almost identical pennant or wedge point like the one we just saw in the Bloomberg Grain Commodity Index. And so we're not just relying upon one wedge. We have a really solid wedge here as far as the market coiling. And the expectation that I would have is that we're going to break one way or the other and get out of this sideways to lower trend. Maybe we go lower again, but I think the path of least resistance, given the crop conditions improving last week, is that we're probably peaking in crop conditions as far as good to excellent here in the United States. Now, what would take us lower? I think a sharp rally in the U.S. dollar, a sharp move lower in the Chinese currency, the Russian ruble. And I think in the case of soybeans, and this is a big deal, I think, on Wednesday's trade was the fact that the Brazilian real, which had given a buy signal to me earlier in the week, took that buy signal away and ended up making gains. The dollar started making gains against it and moving up to last month's highs in the dollar against the real as a result of the CPI data. But I like this chart that it's looking a lot like the Bloomberg Grain Index, even though HRW is not a big percentage of that Bloomberg Grain Index.
Let's segue to livestock. I want to make sure we have time to talk about cattle and hogs here today, Mike. And, you know, I looked at the pressure in both cattle and hogs on Wednesday, and a lot of it I assumed was tied to what we were seeing in the outside markets. Then you share this headline with me about avian flu detected in North Carolina dairy cows. So it makes me wonder, after I thought the news cycle has maybe slowed down a little bit, maybe not so fast. So I'm wondering if this had some impact on cattle futures on Wednesday as well, Mike.
I think so, because this came straight off my headline news on my Newswire feed. I've built a special a page for any headline news that comes across acting like this is an algorithmic type trading. And then if more headline news comes across, as you say and suggest, Jesse, the more news, the worse when it comes to building confidence and coming off those lows from last Friday, which I think are extremely key lows to stay away from and not close back below. In fact, if we would see those lows taken out at this stage of the game on a closing basis, I fear that another 8 to 12% loss could be seen as funds could liquidate even more of their net long positions, because we tend to move in that type of percentage when it comes to swing objectives after trying to form a base, whether it's higher or lower. This is a situation where, simply put, the demand fears that were subsiding are resurrected when you see another state get it. And then, as you said, the outside market, some of the legs of our stool, the hogs down 2%, S&P down 1%, U.S. dollar up 1%, feeder corn ratio hitting major support levels right now on the feeder side of the equation. And so I think, you know, we really are in a tepid position now. And this news story coming out of North Carolina, I think, causes the market to realize that this disease is not being contained. And if it's not being contained, A, where is it coming from? And B, how many more cases are we going to have to hear about this? And how long is it going to go on? And that gets me to another wave down, unfortunately, if we can't hold those lows from Friday.
Well, and I want to pull up our final chart here today, too, to talk about, along with that, monthly feeder cattle, as you're kind of watching this situation. I feel like this feeder futures market has maybe been impacted more than the fat cattle. Both have had their issues, though, with this HPAI outbreak. But walk me through what you're seeing on this monthly feeder chart first here, and anything we need to look at, key areas we need to look at here with some of those lows, et cetera. Talk to me about this, Mike.
Yeah, the feeder cattle futures at 238 compares to the cash index, which has fallen back into the 245, 246 level. And you're right, we're starting to feel a little bit more pain in the feeders on the cash side because of what the futures is doing. Fat cattle, the negotiated cash trade, is around 185 against that futures close in the April contract of looks like 179.15 today. What we really want here, Jesse, before I answer your question, is get this news out of our way and go back to looking at the cash market and seeing how premium the cash is versus the futures. So having said that, what I'm really nervous about is this chart is looking more and more like a double top. We are making new after Friday's lows. We did make a new three-month low. And you notice in this feeder cattle chart, after the move up we had 3 months ago, there's not a lot of support on a monthly basis in this chart. And that old wedge that we broke out of in purple, that could be our target price. And that December 2023 low is right around that 8 to 12% lower number as far as the 209.15 low from December. And that gets you back down around that old breakout point. So this is what I'm talking about visually that I think could happen fundamentally if we don't put the brakes on the demand and consumption fears, because this is coming at the worst possible time seasonally, because we're just starting summer grilling season and we've had record highs in the stock market, a hog market that's been on fire. And we've also seen a situation where the cattle supplies are going down. We've had a lot going for us right now. We don't want to lose everything we've been going for us, especially the consumption confidence side of the equation.
Well, and to all of that as well, one thing you mentioned there, just the premium of cash to futures. You know, feedlots continue to rock. I mean, the sale barns, I mean, continue to rock right now. And I know that, you know, last week I'd maybe said the word collapse a few times and probably should have picked a better word for what's been happening in this cattle market here and the volatility. And, you know, it's just, it's a tough dynamic when you're dealing with psychological pressures in a market, I guess, is what I'm trying to get at. Isn't it, Mike?
I'm going to come to your aid when it comes to that use of that word, because I think it's the best thing to do to help ranchers and help farmers think of their bottom lines, because we're talking about a world we live in of funds versus fundamentals. And we're talking about bleeding red now because the prices have come down. What happens if they go down again because of the funds? Am I serving you and are you serving the listener and the viewer better by making them look again at the possibility of another downside. And the reason I say this, Jesse, is because up until the beginning or middle part of this week, today's Wednesday. So yesterday on Tuesday, my phone stopped ringing of clients wanting to buy cattle. They wanted to buy this dip. And I think you really got to back away from that right now and say, okay, what should I be doing given the fact that I've got feeders and fats out there ready to be sold in 30, 60, 90 days? What if I go down another 15%? What kind of a red balance sheet and am I going to be looking at in that situation? And why wouldn't it be wise to get a $2 or $3 put bought or get a floor underneath me if we take out Friday's lows? That's the risk management. That's keeping people in business, hopefully, a longer period of time instead of getting caught trying to catch a falling knife. And that's what I feel like we're doing right now because the science is not on our side right now. These cases are still being going out into other parts of the country, and we don't know where it's coming from yet. And I was just reading more from a very key avian influenza vet that was talking exactly about this. So this isn't Mike Zuzulo talking. This is a very high level veterinarian saying, we got to pinpoint where this is coming from first before we can really get our arms around it.
Great thoughts. Yeah. And I appreciate you summing that up for us here today. Hogs, real quick, any other thoughts there? I feel like largely it was tied to the pressure in the outside markets, maybe in hogs. Any notes there for us, Mike?
Yeah, and you know, I was always a little bit nervous once we got above 105 in the June. How much could the fundamentals carry us, especially given the U.S.-China trade relationship still being very tenuous right now and our Secretary of Treasury just coming back from there? And I think all these things came together kind of in a perfect storm. So given the WASDE report on Thursday gives us fresh export and import numbers as well as production numbers, I'm going to be looking very closely at that for the hog sector because we should start to see a decline in production given that hogs and pigs breeding number that we just got a week or so ago. If we don't see a full stop on the downside in the hogs, I think we could be hitting a seasonal topping pattern, especially in that June contract, which I think got a little bit overheated. And the fact that the Dali and Chinese futures market started to look a little bit rough as we closed out Wednesday's trade, that too I'm watching as well.
Mike, where can folks find more information if they want to reach out to you and talk about their marketing plans and more? Where can they find you?
Yeah, go to globalcomresearch.com, globalcom with two M's, research.com. There's a free trial, and you can tell me a comment section when you sign up for a trial. If you have any specifics, questions about what Jesse and I have talked about today, please shoot that over to me, and I'll be happy to give you a call back.
Mike Zuzulo, Global Commodity Analytics, always a pleasure, sir. Thanks for joining us this week. Have a good one. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Jesse. Appreciate it.
Once again, Mike Zuzulo there with Global Commodity Analytics. And again, find his website, GlobalCom with two M's, research.com, GlobalComResearch.com. Well, again, Kansas City wheat, the upside leader, while everything else was mixed, firm in corn, firm in Chicago and spring wheat, pressure in soybeans, pressure in livestock, outside markets as well. We're going to run through the closes and take a look at some news headlines on the way. We'll be back with Market Talk right after this.
Make sure to subscribe to the Market Talk YouTube channel. You can watch our latest interviews with top market analysts in the country, find bonus content, and much more. It's easy. Just go to youtube.com/@MarketTalkAg and hit the subscribe button. Or you can search for Market Talk Ag on YouTube.
If you miss an episode of Market Talk, you can listen back to the show anytime. Just search for Market Talk on your podcast platform of choice, and you can hear past episodes of the program on demand.
Keeping you informed with the latest market information for your operation. This is Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
All right. Welcome back to Market Talk here today. Jesse Allen back with you. Always appreciate a conversation with Mike Zuzulo from Global Commodity Analytics. I feel like I learn something new every time I talk to Mike. Such a wealth of information. Happy to have him as one of our featured contributors here on the program each and every week. And he made a really interesting point in that last segment that I want to make sure I echo for him and hammer home to folks listening in here to the show today. I, you know, He made the point of how last week we had all of this trouble in the cattle market tied to the HPAI concerns and the news cycle and more. And then Monday, Tuesday, the cattle futures started to rally a little bit and the phone stopped ringing at his office to some degree. And I think that is so, so important to really examine that thought and think about this for a minute, okay? Because you come in here Wednesday and the cattle market under some more pressure. I'm going to take a look at the closes in a second. But, you know, just thinking that, okay, well, the news is over. Everything's fine. I don't have to figure out a marketing plan or revise my marketing plan if I have one because, oh, well, it's over. Things are going back higher. That's not the best way to think about things because to that point, things could still fall apart. I mean, whether we're talking grains or livestock, and I know there are some folks out there who would rather not trade futures and options. They don't want to deal with it. They don't want to deal with an advisor or a broker or whatever the case is. They just assume sell the cash when they have to and move on about their day. Okay, I get that. Has been a proven method that has worked for many years. And truthfully, I have no skin in this game. I'm just trying to provide a service to farmers and ranchers here. But I harp about this on this show so, so much. Risk management is key. And I think that was a great point to emphasize that Mike mentioned how, it seems like, oh, everything's okay. Phone stops ringing. People stop asking questions. This isn't the markets that you may have traded 10 years ago. These markets are so different. They move off algorithmic news headlines, and next thing you know, you could be down another 10%. That's why I think it's so important to work with someone who knows how these markets trade or learn yourself and do it yourself. But don't just sit idly by. I think that's kind of the message I want to hammer home to folks today, and I'm going to get off my soapbox here in a second because I don't like to do this very often, but I think it's so key. It's something to think about for sure as you look at your markets and your marketing plan. And if you don't have one, well, I hate to break it to you, but in 2024, you probably need to develop one. And don't sit idly by. I've had it happen to me before where people have said, oh, I got 20,000 bushels of corn sitting in the bin and don't know, I was waiting for $7 and now it's at $3.50. Well, kind of missed the boat. And I know a lot of folks would just love to sell the high every time. And that's that. It's not really how it's going to work. I mean, you got to be comfortable finding that profit and necessarily not finding the price you want. And I'm stealing that from my friends at agmarket.net, who we talk to here on the show. So, all right, I'm getting off my soapbox. I wanted to really hammer that point home. Some people listening might disagree with me on that still, and that's fine. You are entitled to your opinion there. My opinion is find a trusted advisor if you don't have one, or learn it yourself, develop a marketing plan, and make sure you protect your risk. That is the point I'm driving home. All right, let's take a look at the closing numbers here. I was going to get to news headlines. I'm probably not going to get to those now. We'll see. Looking at the numbers on Wednesday, May corn was 3 higher, 434 and a quarter. July corn up 3 and a quarter, 445 and three quarters. December corn 2 higher, 470 and a quarter. May soybeans 9 and three quarters lower, 1164 and three quarters. July beans 9 and three quarters lower, 1178. November beans 9 lower, 1169 and a quarter. May bean meal down 470 a ton, 330.90. May soybean oil 8 points higher at 47.60. Chicago wheat May 3 quarters higher, 558 and a half. July Chicago wheat up 1.5, 573.5. May Kansas City wheat 17.25 higher, 594.5. July KC wheat up 13.5, 587.75. Looking at spring wheat, Minneapolis May half penny higher, 651.75. July up 1.25, 659. Oats for May 8 higher, 337.75. July oats up 11.25, 335.5. Canola was mostly about one higher on the day. Over in the cotton market, we saw May cotton down 73 points, 85.31. July cotton down 77 points, 87.07. The dairy trade was getting that number pulled up here. as not seeing those numbers wanting to refresh. So we'll come back to the dairy trade. Livestock futures pressured there on the day. April live cattle Wednesday down 162, 179.07. June down $2, 172.85. August live cattle down 190, 170.65. April feeder cattle 242 lower, 238.27. May down 292, 236.52 in feeder cattle. And we look over at the hog market. April was up 115, 91.75. May hogs down 222, 96.55. And June hogs down 302, 105.55. Dairy trade mixed bag there. April down 7, 15.49 in class 3 milk futures. Butter, cheese prices kind of just quietly mixed on the session there. And again, a lot of pressure in the outside market. Stocks under that heavy pressure with that CPI data out on Wednesday morning, hotter than expected. The Dow down over 500 points. Crude oil hovered above $86 a barrel. Gold under a little bit of pressure as well on Wednesday. So overall, we're going to call it a risk-off to firm day, with the exception being Kansas City wheat futures finding some of that support that we talked about with Mike Zuzulo here on the show today. All right, with that, we are out of time on the program. Like I said, I thought I'd get to some news headlines, but I got on my soapbox for too long. Thanks for listening to the show. As always, great to have you along as we talk markets and issues impacting rural America here on Market Talk. Coming up on tomorrow's program, we're going to recap the April WASDE report. We'll talk with Brian Doherty, Senior Market Advisor at Total Farm Marketing. All that and more coming up on tomorrow's program. For now, though, I'm Jesse Allen. Have a great rest of your day. Thanks for listening to Market Talk.